Warning: this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Views is vapor done right. What does that mean? Well, we sweat the small stuff, so you have a smooth, consistent draw every time. That way you can focus on what matters, like getting back to your podcast. Learn more at views.com. That's V-U-S-E.com.
Underage sale prohibited. Views is a vapor product. Website restricted to age 21 plus tobacco consumers. Copyright 2026 RJRVC.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Soccer Matters.
Kickshot score! The U.S. with Dempsey!
So Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside!
El centro, remate de gol. Gol de oro. Gol de oro. Gol de Oribe.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, Andrea Hochstadter, added to the Dash roster from Iceland, played at the University of South Florida, had been playing in both Iceland and in France with Le Havre. Seven appearances there, has been on the Icelandic national team, so she's a new signing. The challenge of the Tokyo Olympics will take players away from the NWSO without a doubt. We welcome you back, Eddie Robinson, Channel 55 analyst, also former Dynamo player, and also Victor Ariza with the Striker Texas. So we continue on here. All right, let's talk about the potential signing, and it sounds like this is going to happen. Teenage Hedebi plays for Malatyaspor in the Turkish Superliga. You heard the call from William there early asking about him. I have not seen him play a lot. Left-footed center back. Any thoughts on that? I'll start with you, Victor.
Yeah, well, the Dynamo obviously need to figure something out at center back, right? I think that's the biggest thing. Boniek being an option there, bless his heart, he's obviously a hard worker and he'll give everything for the team. But, you know, you need a viable option if it's not going to be Alejandro Fuenmayor or, you know, I don't know what the deal is with Minor Figueroa, who, you know, has played in the Premier League. But if you're not confident in those guys playing, you need somebody there next to Tim Parker, because part of the reason why we're talking about this, which formation we would prefer, what midfield, it all starts with the back, right? And stability at the back.
Well, as stability has improved simply with Parker, now they got to find him a partner, which I agree, you know, at some point you got to stop the stopgap stuff. Boniek, totally honorable with what he did. He was exposed in this last game. I think he was a little bit more frustrated watching that game. Game was a quick game. There were guys on the Houston Dynamo that you don't know played that game because that was a fast game, a number of them. I would say the guys' work ethics that blew me away were pretty much, again, Fafa Pico and Maxi Arruti, off the charts. I mean, I don't know how many times Pico came back and headed away corners. The problem was those guys had to defend so much, it was tough to get them in front of the ball, in my opinion. Eddie, what about Teenage Hedebi?
Well, listen, I've been a part of this organization in some way, shape, or form from day one. And the one thing that I've learned is until it's official, maybe you shouldn't put too much into it. If it is true, I think this guy brings some real steel, some real hardness, watching some of his highlights on YouTube, you know, kicking people in the chest and fouling guys, getting sent off. Kind of reminds me of myself when I was younger. But I think he kind of fits the mold of what Saab Ramos is trying to shape this team into, because the one thing that we've said after every single game is maybe the team didn't play as well as they should have, but the attitude, the effort, and the fight has been there, and we've seen it from Saab Ramos on the sideline. We've heard it from him in post-game conferences, press conferences, and I think that, you know, if this is true, then I think he fits that mold, and this is something that you're looking for. You want to have intimidating center backs. You want to have center backs that forwards don't want to play against. That's how I always tried to be. Before kickoff, I wanted that forwards to look across and see me and say, man,
this is going to be a long night. I think that's something he would bring if the Dynamo did sign him.
So that would also, you know, you got to think of it from Tim Parker's standpoint, too. He eventually wants to have a partner. If we remember him at the New York Red Bulls, he had Aaron Long, who unfortunately has just gotten a pretty serious injury that's going to knock him off the U.S. national team. But to gain some stability there and answer that question is one. My gut tells me the team needs additions in every line of the team, if you include the potential and the rumored signing of Hadebe. And if that happens, you need a creative fulcrum, you need a game changer, and you may even need another forward. What do you think, Victor?
Yeah, well, the biggest thoughts, I think, obviously you need more competition as far as, I mean, look, if Quintero's not going to be if you're not going to consider him for that number 10, right, the challenge memo, I do think you need to bring somebody in to challenge him, and that's part of him being inconsistent. Adam Lundqvist, I think, also is another one of those players that probably needs a little bit more challenge. And then the bigger one is, listen, you made a good acquisition with the front three, right? Obviously, Tyler Pascher was a great pickup, but at the moment, you don't have him available because of injuries. So if you don't trust, the same thing we're talking about the other positions. If you don't trust who's there with Bahamic or some of these other guys, bring in somebody you do trust and bring more depth that's actually going to be depth and not just names on the team sheet.
Well, we have a transfer window. It can't happen with the click of a finger always, but there is a transfer window coming up. Outside of a center back, Eddie, what would be on your wish list for the Dynamo when it comes to acquiring a player?
To be honest, I mean, if, you know, I think when you look at all the young South American players that are coming into the league between, you know, $3 to $5 million transfer figures that are actually really making a difference, I think a number 10 would be awesome. But, you know, with the rumored sale of the team, the current owners aren't going to spend that money. So it really comes down to,
well, we don't know that. We don't know that.
If it
the current owner may come in and may spend money on more players. I mean, I think that's a big question to everybody.
Like you did last year?
If
like
a new
did last
owner,
year, the year before that, or the year before that? No.
Well, who are you talking
spend money
about?
Now.
Who are you talking about?
Gabriel Brenner.
No, I'm talking about Siegel. If Siegel, the rumored new owner, comes in, we don't know what he's going to do.
That's what I'm saying.
Can go in any direction.
Is not going to spend money. So what if? So if the sale doesn't go through before the window closes, because it was supposed to, you know,
well, I'm not asking about if the sale's going to go through. I'm saying if it did go through, what would be your first place that you would want to spend money on when it came to play?
A number 10. A creative number 10.
That's all I was asking.
Get Maxi Rudy in behind, that could get Papa Pico in behind, that could create chances, that could beat defenders 1v1, because that's the thing that the Dynamo are lacking the most, is an attacking player that can dribble at players and beat players 1v1. Because when you look at those 1v1 dribbles, the Dynamo don't have anybody that's anywhere close to the top 20 in that statistic. And that's what you need if you want to unbalance defenses. You need one of those players that can not only create for others, but can dribble, beat defenders, and unbalance that back four.
Yeah, I think Fafa Pico right now has got the best numbers. I think Pascher was doing a bit of that before Tyler Pascher got hurt, so this will give him an opportunity to get healthy. All right, let me take you – well, we only got about a minute, so let's just go with this question here, a minute or two real quick. How important is this Nations League on Thursday? Eddie, you go first. For the U.S. to produce in this, play well, and win this thing?
Well, Honduras and Costa Rica are not pushovers. Those are the two games that they're playing, right? They're not pushovers. Yeah. They're going to be difficult. And I want to know who Greg Berhalter is going to choose for his team. And if they don't win both of these games, is he going to be on the hot seat or not? Is he going to be responsible? That's the biggest thing going in for me.
Victor?
Yeah, we got to see bragging rights. Who's the top team in CONCACAF? Because ultimately, that'll give us an idea of what we're looking at. Maybe possibilities as far as the World Cup, right? How far can you aspire? Can you be king of your region?
So, if we're talking about the U.S., watching the Switzerland game, Eddie, what do you think of that? Obviously, the U.S. is going to get Christian Pulisic. They're going to get Zach Steffen. And I believe Tyler Adams, although he's coming off. Those three guys would make that lineup look a lot different, wouldn't it?
Christian Pulisic changes the offense, but defensively for me, the U.S. is just not good enough right now, and I don't know if it's chemistry or what it is. I don't think Zach Steffen would make that big of a difference when it comes to the back four and the holding midfield. Weston McKennie being up front with those front three is going to be huge when you add Christian Pulisic, and that might take some of the pressure off the defense. But, I mean, yeah, I'm worried about the defense.
Yeah, Mark McKenzie got the start in that game. Aaron Long out injured. It looked a little bit sloppy against Switzerland. Well, we'll see what happens on Thursday. Victor, thank you so much. Eddie, thank you so much. Appreciate you guys tonight coming on and giving us your thoughts.
Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you.
All right, guys. We'll talk soon. Eddie and Victor, good stuff there in those two segments. We're going to take a break here. We're going to come back part two of Steve Nichol, and then later on tonight we'll have Rodrigo De Luna on talking about the fans that suffer with their teams, Cruz Azul, some of the things that came out of that game, sidebar stories, and more. Thanks for tuning in so far to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We'll take a break. We have more to come.
ESPN 97.5.
Hi, guys. I'm Hector Moreno. You're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. A big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, the presenting sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Time now for part two of Steve Nichol. He's Steve Nichol, former Liverpool star. You can catch him on ESPN all the time. Steve, the modern game now, based on where the game was when you played it, the things you like about it, maybe some of the things you don't like about it. I think I know some of the things you don't like about it. But, yeah, take us into that a little bit, because I think that's interesting from your perspective.
What I don't like about it? My goodness. A lot of silly little things. But this has got nothing to do with your question, by the way. But
that's okay.
The one thing that annoys me is when I hear people saying, you know, could your Liverpool teams play against the Liverpool team of today? And I think, why would you ask that question? Because the pitch is bigger today, and I don't mean in feet and inches, but the pitch is bigger because the ball, your average player can ping the ball 60 yards now. That's why teams can be so open. Because there's more time, there's more space on the ball. You know, when in the 80s, early 90s, your average player couldn't ping the ball 40 yards. And so it made the field smaller. It made less time on the ball. You had to think quicker. So, listen, we were known for keeping the ball, teams not being able to get the ball off us. How good would we be when the field's bigger? How good would we be when we have more time and more space to play?
Right.
So that's the big things that annoys me more than anything else.
That's a great comparison there, and that is interesting the way you described it.
Well, you couldn't. There's no way that you would be able to play out from the back. Number one against the side that we had, because we would squeeze the life out of you. You just wouldn't have had enough room. Now the fact that you can ping the ball 60 yards means that, you know. As I said, even the goalkeeper's pinging balls 60 yards and picking people out on the way out wide on the halfway line. So it's a completely different game. I detest the diving, the falling over. And I don't know whether I detest it more because the players do it or because the referees let them do it. Because at the end of the day, it could easily be stopped. Just stop giving fouls for somebody, you know, flicking you with a pinky. Just don't give the fouls. But that's never going to happen. That's the way the game's gone. And so it's just, it really is annoying to watch. Just people falling over for no apparent reason, and then the referee gives it.
Yeah, and game stops. Steve Nichol joining us here. How about the new substitution rule? Three different substitutions, time periods now. You can use five. Do you think it's going to stay? I have a feeling this is not going away. And this will change the game, because aren't you going to now train players, especially in the attacking areas of your team, to play 40, 50, 60 minutes at 100% full throttle, as opposed to teaching people how to play 90 minutes and be economical with their running and their thinking. Would that change the game? Do you think it's going to stay?
Oh, it's absolutely going to stay now. No question. And that's why there's always a pushback, because we know that when things are tried out, 99 times out of 100, it usually benefits the team. The bigger sides, the better sides, the sides with more players, the sides with more money. And so yet again, this rule, all it does is makes it easier for the big teams with the bigger squads and more players and more money. It's another kick in the teeth for the minnows that are trying to build themselves up. I mean, how are Southampton, you know, I know we're going to go experience, but Manchester City have basically got 22 players. And I would suggest that probably 18 of those 22 would walk into any other team in the Premier League almost. Now, Southampton's starting 11. Would any of the players walk into any team in the Premier League? Never mind the six or seven that are sitting on the bench. So, I mean, that's just unfair. I mean, that's just not right. At least when you have only three subs, then you can make a difference to the outcome because of the physical aspect of the game. Now, we can't challenge anybody anymore, so the physical side of actually kicking people and muscling them is gone. But you can be as fit and as strong and as quick as you can so that you can defend for 90 minutes at a certain level. If you've got a team that can turn around and bring on five world-class players with half an hour to go and they're going to be running at 100 miles an hour against somebody who's been playing already for 60 minutes, they're not going to be able to physically challenge anybody who's fresh, who's just come on the field. So it's just everything seems to be getting pointed towards the big teams. The big teams are the ones that are going to benefit most from more subs, no question.
Steve Nichol joining us from ESPN. So if I look at it from the MLS perspective and I look at academies and everybody's excited about the accelerated development of young players now, what's the point of training kids to play 90 minutes in attacking roles if this is the way the league's going to be in the future and coaches are going to ask guys, just push yourself for whatever you have, 40, 50, 60 minutes, and we're going to change you out?
I don't like that. It sounds like we're getting closer and closer to playing indoor. You know, I mean,
line changes.
When you go to ground, never, even in the 11-a-side game now, you go to ground, there's always a free kick. You know, everything. We're trying to change too much. Yeah. Really, we're really trying to change too much. There was nothing wrong with the basics of the game. Listen, it's one thing to change the technology. I'm talking about the ball. It's one thing for the technology to change. You know, the ball and the books and players are bigger, fitter, stronger. That's fine. But when you start trying to change the parameters that made the game so great, why are you doing it? You know, why are you doing it? I don't understand why they can't leave something that has got so many billions around the world think it's the greatest game on earth. So why are you trying to change it all the time? I just don't understand it.
Yeah, my worry is it's such a unique game in that it's free flowing and it's so different than all the traditional American sports that have stoppage after stop. And now all of a sudden we're stopping it repeatedly for VAR, and they're not clear and obvious situations. They're minute situations, and the whole thing's being abused, and people are making money and jobs, and they got to make sure that they are validating what they're doing. It's just this bad circle.
Right. No. I have to say that if there was one thing that I'm in favour of, it's VAR.
To what degree?
Well, the fact that, well, it's, you know, the reasoning behind VAR is fantastic, because for so many years, and having been involved in situations where, A, I've scored a goal, it was disallowed, and the you know, the call from the linesman were absolute garbage, having been on the other side of it where somebody's clearly in an offside position, the linesman doesn't give it, they score a goal. You know, I'll give you a great example. I'll give you two, actually. An old one and a new one. In 1972, Leeds United needed a draw to win what's now the Premier League against West Bromwich Albion. A guy was five yards offside with 5 minutes to go, and Leeds lost the title because they lost the game 1-0. That is wrong. There's nothing anybody can tell me about
and
that.
Obvious. And obvious.
Right. And here's this. Well, and again, the obvious one, I think, is they have to get rid of this nonsense. It's right or wrong.
Right.
Not obvious or not obvious. It's right or wrong. Leicester City would have lost the FA Cup. Leicester City, in their whole complete and utter history, 100-odd years, have never won the FA Cup. Had we not had VAR, Leicester would not have won the FA Cup last weekend. Because without VAR, we wouldn't have seen that the goal was offside. You know, so it's hard to argue against VAR because these decisions are huge. Those two decisions I've told you about, I mean, can you imagine how big they are? That's why we need to get better at using VAR. I'm not saying that VAR is perfect, but I think VAR is a fantastic tool.
So let me rephrase the question because I don't think I presented it properly. Is it being utilized properly by the people? Of course, the things that, you know, Thierry Henry slapping a ball down with his hand denying, I think it was Ireland to go to a World Cup, right? The whole world saw it, right? Yeah. I thought this is what VAR was for, to really protect these things. Now when I see people listening to the VAR referee, and we're talking about inches now on an offside call, is that stuff you really want to have the game stopped for? You know, somebody's earlobe is in an offside position. Do we want to stop the game that much and break up the flow of it? And I'm in favor of VAR like you, but I'm not necessarily, I don't like the way it's being used. I think it's being overused. I guess that's how I can say it.
Right. I wouldn't disagree with that. Yeah. I don't think it's ever going away, and I think it's a good thing. I just think we need to figure out the right times and the better times to use it. I think that's the key with VAR.
Steve, listen, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure. We didn't even get to the Champions League, but you know what? The next time a defender wins the PFA Football Writers Award, I'm coming to you again. You know that. And I hope that's going to be in about a couple of weeks.
I can be 6 foot under the next time that happens.
No. I would love to get you back on again. I mean, this conversation was fantastic. Thank you so much.
All right, Glenn. Cheers.
All right. He's the one and only Steve Nichol. You can catch him on ESPN, former Liverpool great, Scotland great. We thank him for coming on the show tonight. All right, that was part two of Steve Nichol, the former Liverpool star. Big thank you to him. This is all brought to you by FM Kitchen and Bar, Cactus Music, and our great friends at Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture. Stay with us. More on Soccer Matters here at ESPN 97.5, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports.
I'm Vlad Kendinovsky, the coach of U.S. Women National Team. And you're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. We ended in big style here tonight. First, a word here for Advantage BMW Midtown. My good friends at Advantage BMW, I've leased, I've bought from Advantage numerous times. Love the drive. All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. Ended in big style here tonight. First, a word here for Advantage BMW Midtown. My good friends at Advantage BMW, I've leased, I've bought from Advantage numerous times. Love the drive of a BMW. After all, it is the ultimate driving machine. The other thing I love at Advantage BMW is the customer service. It's second to none. I'm not the kind of guy to get under the hood of a car. I wish I was. I just want the vehicle to work. Advantage BMW,
They'll cover you with sales, service, finance. It can be done so easy. So get in a 3, a 5, a 7 series, get in an SUV, Advantage BMW Midtown, get that hometown advantage, Advantage BMW Midtown in Houston, AdvantageBMWHouston.com, proud sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. I love soccer fans that remain loyal to their team no matter what happens. Certainly Cruz Azul fans after 23 years have to be rejoicing. The parties, the scenes in Mexico City, unbelievable. After the 2-1 aggregate win over Santos Laguna, my good friend, a good friend in the Houston soccer community who has done so much over the years promoting, organizing, moving the sport forward. He is Rodrigo De Luna. He joins us now. Rodrigo, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you, Glenn.
All right, 23 years of suffering with Cruz Azul. It's over, brother. How do you feel?
Oh, it feels magnificent, Glenn.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, the history of growing up in Mexico City, how you became such a fan of Cruz Azul, and why you have this amazing, undying loyalty. You know, we see fans flip all the time for other teams.
Actually, Glenn, I didn't grow up in Mexico City. My family from Monterrey, Mexico. And that's where I spent my summers. That's okay. I spent my summers in Monterrey as a kid. As soon as I got out of school, I was in Monterrey. And I saw my fans, my family's either Tigres or Rayados, as you can already tell. But I saw Cruz Azul play back in the 70s, played Rayados in Monterrey. And I was impressed with Cruz Azul, and I became a fan. Miguel Marin, the Argentine goalkeeper, was the guy that made me a fan, the way he played, right? The way he would fly from one end of the goal post to the other, and just the way the team played. I was impressed and blown away, and I loved the name. So I just became a Cruz Azul fan back in 75, 76. I don't remember.
And it just stuck with you? That simply was it, seeing him play one game, and it really just kind of hooked you? And ever since then, you've always been a fan? Because, look, you grow up in a city that's got Tigres and Monterrey.
Yes. Yes. You know, like I said, my family are Tigres and Monterrey, and every summer, you know, I go there, and that's all they talk about. But, you know, I just latched on to Cruz Azul, and I like the logo. I like the fact that it had a cross. So, I mean, that was it for me. And just the way he played.
Rodrigo De Luna joining us. You know, I know you and I have had conversations about soccer fans. We have them from all over the world here in Houston that are devout, very devoted, loyal fans to their clubs and their countries. You're an example, though, that you can be certainly devout, and you have been to Cruz Azul all these years, but you can also support a secondary team.
You know, Glenn, soccer is a global sport. And as much as I love Cruz Azul, they don't play in Europe. They don't play in England or France or Italy or Spain. So being a fan of the sport, Glenn, you know, I've learned to love other teams, you know, not on the same level as Cruz Azul, but you know me, I'm a Chelsea fan since the 80s. I support Barcelona since the 80s. I love Inter Milan. And I love Boca Juniors, because Cruz Azul doesn't play in those leagues. And this is a global sport.
Rodrigo De Luna joining us here. All right, you've talked about suffering, the concept of suffering when it comes to being a supporter of a team. 11 times Cruz Azul has been a runner-up. I mean, you've suffered through all of these, okay?
Yes.
Not to mention a few other tournaments as well, including Copa Libertadores. The concept of suffering, take me into it.
You know, it's like anything. You're faithful to the end. Just like if you pick a team and this is a team you want to support, whatever sport it is, you're not always going to be champions. You're going to go through dry spells, and there's teams that never won. So you support that team because you love the team for whatever reason, and you have to endure the bad times as well as the glorious times. And I've learned to do that, you know, since very young, and it's part of being a fan.
Is this the difference between the international soccer fan in some cases around the world than maybe the American sports fan who, you know, sometimes the American sports fan can be a bit of a bandwagon?
No, there are pockets here in the United States, especially in college, where they're very, very fanatical because they have a direct link with the college, right? And in professional sports, there's pockets of America. You know, you hear of the Green Bay Packers, the Cheeseheads, you know, the dog pound from the Cleveland Browns and the Dallas Cowboy fans. Those are very secure fans. But it's different in soccer because in soccer you get relegated. Your team can go down to second, third, fourth division. And you support that team regardless. And you suffer with that team. That's the difference. And I don't think Americans could deal with relegation. Yeah, Fulham
fans are going to figure that out this year. You know, the up and down of it and trying to get back to the Premier League. Yeah, it is a concept that a lot of Americans don't even understand, frankly. But it does put skin in the game, and it makes it very, very interesting. We're talking to Rodrigo De Luna, longtime contributor to the Houston soccer community here. All right, some great stories came out of the Cruz Azul win. Juan Reynoso, the coach, also won a Liga MX title as a player. He's now done it as a coach. Spectacular.
Well, he was the captain who last lifted the trophy back in 97. He was captain the last time Cruz Azul won the league in 1997 against Leon in Leon. And now, later, 23 years later, he lifts the trophy as the coach. Amazing.
Pretty remarkable story. Also, you have Jesus Corona in goal, who's a 40-year-old who's seen everything at Cruz Azul.
Yeah. Another thing about Juan Reynoso, he promised he would give his medal if he wanted to Enrique Mesa, who got him started as a coach and helped him out a lot. He made that promise and he fulfilled it. He went, there's a picture of him and Enrique Mesa with he gave Enrique his medal. Beautiful story.
What about Jesus Corona, the goalkeeper at 40?
Jesus Corona, you know, he's been there. He was there. He's been there for 18 years, for a long time. I think 18. I don't remember exactly, but and he's been part of the good times, and you know, he's been part of some of those finals they lost. He won the gold medal with Mexico as a goalkeeper, but he needed to win a title with Cruz Azul, or he retired, and he pulled it off.
Rodrigo De Luna joining us here. Now, there was another really cool story about one of the players and his wife, and they got in a car accident. They lost their baby in it. Take us into that story a little bit, because that one didn't get out quite as much, and you were the one who alerted me to that, so thank you for that.
Yeah, before the final, before the first game against Santos, Roberto Alvarado, they call him El Piojo. I don't know why, but they call him Piojo also. Him and his wife were involved in an automobile accident. Tragically, they lost their baby girl. And the team rallied around him. They rallied around him, and they used this game also to dedicate it to the family, to their loss. And you saw some players walking around with Alvarado's shirt, the number 25 shirt. Jesus Corona presented in the lineup and after the game. Some players held his jersey in honor of him and his family, and as a tribute to his, unfortunately, his baby they lost.
Rodrigo, this was special. You could see it on the faces of people in Mexico City. Take us a little bit deeper into the fandom, why this meant so much. Yes, the suffering. Yes, being denied at the final hurdle 11 times in recent times. But what else resonates here with you when you see the images of fans going to the Angel in Mexico City and celebrating?
You know, aside from suffering with not winning a league in 23 years, they've gone through some horrible scandals. The president of Cruz Azul for the last 30 years, he is a wanted fugitive. We talked about this. Billy Alvarez, who made money out of buying Deadwood players from South America, and there's talk of him corrupting the finals. He's a fugitive. He's wanted by Interpol. And this whole scandal of president having to be forced out and on the lam, basically. And here's a team he couldn't spend any money because this guy stole like $500 or $600 million. So there was a lot of money to spend. So here's a team that made it with young kids, some of the same players, and no heavy buys, no big signings. And the thing about it is, you know, the way the Mexican League is, you have the games and then you have the playoffs. Well, Cruz Azul, one of the leaders, super leader, the one is the top team in the league before the playoffs. Well, here they are with that squad. You know, they were undefeated for like 11 or 12 games, right? So they were the best team in the league. Then they win the title. After all of this scandal with the president and, again, 11 finals and the humiliation of being called subcampeonísimo, there was second placers. So yeah, it was vindicating for a lot of people.
Talking to Rodrigo De Luna here, we're talking about Cruz Azul, this big championship. By the way, it was 1-1 on aggregate until Uruguayan forward Jonathan Rodriguez scored in the second half. The game ended 1-1, but virtue of the 1-0 win in Torreón. Cruz Azul on aggregate 2-1. So Mexico City went crazy. Fireworks, cars, the iconic Angel of Independence monument was, I saw all kinds of cool videos from there. The president tweets something out that, quote, the curse is over. Do you believe in curses? Do you believe in that?
Yes and no. I believe in I do believe in curses, but you know, a sporting curse, I really don't. You know, there's this famous curse at Benfica with the coach, Bela Gutman, who cursed the team because they wouldn't give him a raise, and he left, and he cursed Benfica never to win an international title in 100 years. Well, they're still there trying to win an international title. I don't know, Glenn. It's a good story. I think the curse is more, instead of supernatural, I think it's a frustration curse more than a supernatural curse. You know, it's the things that happen in sports. It's the thing that happens, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. Here in the States, I see a lot of comparisons now to teams that had long extended losing streaks, you know. There's comparisons to the Boston Red Sox, who apparently had a curse for many decades.
The Chicago Cubs, the GOAT.
Yeah. You know? So how do you, you know, is it just bad karma? You know, Cruz Azul now has alleviated themselves of this suffering. What do we have to look forward to now?
But, you know, I think they won this title at the right time without big name players being bought in. You know, after the scandal of the president, I think this was a proper time for them to win because it shows that this team showed mental toughness, a resilience. The fact that the former captain who last lifted a trophy came back to lead him to a title, I think it worked out perfectly. If you think about all these factors, it was the right time for Cruz Azul to win their ninth star. If you think about it, that it was perfect. After all the things they went through and the circumstances, you know, and the squad being the way it is, you know, Chaco Jimenez being a legend, Cruz Azul couldn't win the title, but his son wins it in his second year. I mean, what kind of story is in second season? What kind of story is that? You know, his son wins it when his father couldn't win it. You know, so there's a lot of great things there. That's timing-wise, turned out pretty good.
So, Chaco, I saw that picture of Chaco Jimenez and his son. That was a beautiful picture after the game. You know, what more can you say about Chaco and his connection to this club? And then his son and a lot of young guys who helped produce his victory. Did they all come out of the Cruz Azul Academy or were they assembled?
Most of those kids are, but Chaco's son, Santiago, Santi, he is from the Cruz Azul Academy. He grew up there under his father. So, yeah, he's kind of in his blood also. So, again, the circumstances that this kid, you know, and the cool part, you know, he had that little bandana on and said 100% Jesus was wonderful. All the circumstances that were in play made this the perfect time for Cruz Azul to win their ninth trophy.
So out of the Mexico City press, what have you seen, Rodrigo? I mean, how do they position this? Is it simply just about, you know, finally winning the title, or, you know, is anybody projecting anything out in the future from Cruz Azul? How does this platform them with all the troubles, including the financial troubles, you know, of a guy who's out and being tracked by Interpol?
You know, the thing about it is all the press is pretty good about it. And some of these guys have to eat their words because they say, oh, they're going to Cruz Azulear it. Again, they're going to Cruz Azul it. They're going to blow it. So a lot of journalists have to eat their words, right? And looking back in the season, the great season they had, along with winning the title so much, I think I think the whole city celebrated because there's a tower there that also went blue with the logo and everything. So I think it was a good excuse for the whole city to, and lots of parts of Mexico, because there's Cruz Azul fans all over Mexico. It was a big celebration. So it turned out pretty well, even on from the journalistic side.
Contreras in the 37th tied it for Santos Laguna at 1-1. At that point, the aggregate was tied, and then Jonathan Rodriguez in the 51st minute. Santos, through my eye test, had more of the ball in this game. Shots seemed pretty even, although Cruz Azul maybe had a couple better chances at the end of the day. Anybody especially that you thought played well for Cruz Azul that deserves additional mention?
You know, the story was that the halftime, when they went into halftime dressing room, the coach ripped them apart. And they came up with different a different let's say attitude when they came out. When they took up, they put in effect what they were, what they had practiced.
Well, they came out
and they all admit it. You know, and you look at Cata Diaz, who was maligned for so long for being part of that losing side, and from last season when they lost after being up 4-0 against Pumas and then losing 4-0, this guy took a lot of heat. And if you look at when they lifted the trophy, Jesus Corona being the captain said, "No, come on, lift it with me," right? So they both lifted the trophy. And I think Cata Rodriguez was a big part of that because he went out to prove himself that, you know, I'm not a loser. I'm not part of the curse, you know. So he played his skin off. The defense of Cruz Azul, the back three were fantastic. But Cata, I mean, he did a really good job. He did a really good job. He played his skin off. And it was vindicating for him also. But again, you know, you look at the coach. He was a big part of their win.
At Cruz Azul, CRUZAZUL. If you go there on Twitter, you can see amazing images of celebrations, players. The smiles are contagious. They win a title for the first time. Before I let you go, Rodrigo, thinking of the goal scorer, just take me into the conundrum of the fan now, because, you know, what is a fan supposed to do when they don't feel like an organization is giving their all? You know, these fans could have turned on Cruz Azul, especially after the last tournament failure. In fact, some of them probably did. Where is the conundrum? Do you continue to support no matter what? Or, you know, is it okay to take your wallet away and walk away and not fund a team if you don't feel like they're giving it their all?
Well, there's differences, Glenn. You support the team in the good times and the bad times. Fans were mad. There's an image of this fan with his shirt off saying, "We're here for this, the club, the shirt, not for you, but for the club." So the anger is there, the frustration is there, but also the love. A lot of fans didn't leave the club. They were angry. They expressed anger, frustration, and they vented on the players, and they call them every name in the book, but they never, ever abandoned the club. They didn't go out and become America fans or Chivas fans or Tigres fans. No. And you know, you as a fan who spends his money, you have the right for that, but you stick with the team. And you know, and putting up with the insults and all of the banter from your rival fans and being laughed at and made fun of, even in the press, because the Mexican press had a field day of Cruz Azul for the many, many years. But it made the fans like me, it just said, you know what, I'm sticking with this team even more because this is my club and they need me. You know, the players may not be worth, you know, there's a saying that what makes a club big, it's people. In other words, what makes a club big is not so much how much they win, but it's the supporters, the people who follow the team in the good times and the bad times. And that explains everything.
Rodrigo, great stuff. We thank you very much. It's great being a fan. It's great being a Cruz Azul fan right now, I think. And there is,
you know, no good time, bad time.
The sport brings out tremendous emotion in all of us. It was great to see Cruz Azul put an end to the drought. I'm glad you got to celebrate it because I've seen you suffer for a lot over the years, you know, and whenever Cruz Azul would get to a final, I'm like, oh, should I call him or not? Well, we got it from you tonight. You're a champion with Cruz Azul. Rodrigo, you're a champion for the soccer community in Houston. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Glenn. Have a great evening. Talk to you soon, man.
All right, that's Rodrigo de Luna, long time in the Houston soccer community. You remember his days at Fiesta, organizing events, pushing the sport forward, and he still does. No question about that. Hey, by the way, Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. It is the official home of the Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 Euros. The official home is Hugh O'Connor's Pub, 7620 83 Way, Marquee Entertainment Center. They got 18 TVs. They're going to have big screens out there. We're going to do live shows out there in the month of June. We want you to come join us out there on Tuesday nights. We're going to give away soccer jerseys. We're going to have tickets. We're going to have scarves, all kinds of really cool items to be given away out there on Tuesday nights. So it'll be live radio out there. There'll be a lot of guest hosts. It will be at Hugh O'Connor's, the official
home of the European Championships for Soccer Matters and ESPN 97.5. A big thank you to all of our guests tonight, to Aaron Raybould. We thank you for tuning in. And don't forget our podcast is taking over at ESPN975.com. Hit me up on Twitter and Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock. Until next Tuesday night, on behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Thank you tonight for tuning in.
ESPN 97.5.